Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight it's Lillian Vasquez in conversation with comedian Paula Poundstone at the Fox Performing Arts Center, September 23rd, presented by the Mary S. Roberts Pettit Option Center. We'll start tonight with Goldilocks and the Goldilocks Band, based out of Nashville. They'll be on KVCR-TV September 12th as we introduce several new KVCR television hosts, with Goldie amongst them. Now, the song behind us now may end up being the theme for Goldie's show coming next year. It's different than much of the music you may hear from the Goldilocks Band, but that really shouldn't surprise anyone who's heard them.
We cover a lot of original music. We've got heavier stuff, David, and we like to pride ourselves on every crowd is different. Every place, every venue is different. We just feed off the people, and we do have like 800 cover songs that we can pull out. It's, you know, as much as people enjoy original music, some people want to hear a song that brings them back to a moment in time, or a first kiss, or a dance, or a job promotion, or just a fun trip with some friends on the road, and we like to be able to play that.
Somewhere I saw a list of the songs that you did in 2016 or 2015 or something
like
that.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And
digging deeper
even
in.
Even Rick Springfield to Enter Sandman.
I know, right? I like going like Katy Perry to some Dio or Metallica.
Nice.
It's great. It's fun.
It is great. Okay.
I think it's great.
As you're performing with the Goldilocks Band, is that more of a cover situation?
It totally depends.
Okay.
Like when we get hired, it's like you guys will be playing originals, you guys will be playing covers. Usually it's a mixture of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I noticed in the comments section of one of your videos, I think this came from your aunt. Some folks do know you by a different name. Do you want to go there, or have I just written
No,
the right
you
point?
Can go there. That's fine. I appreciate you being so sensitive and asking. It's a very personal name, my birth name. I think there's a certain power to a name that's like, if you name somebody, you know, poor pathetic jerk, like that's probably not gonna bless
them
yeah in their lives. But when you're named after strength or perseverance or wisdom, clearly you're given a better lot in life. So I mean, I really believe my birth name, which is Moonshadow, I'm named after a Cat Stevens song, and I sing the chorus, I sing mostly the verses. Are you familiar with the song?
Oh yeah, no,
for
I
those
love
of you that aren't. If I ever lose my eyes, if my colors all run dry, if I ever lose my eyes away, I won't have to cry no more. And to think the incentive of somebody writing a song about losing your eyesight or losing your legs or whatever, and still putting a positive golden spin on it, I just think, whether I wanted to or not, that rubbed off on my life. I'm just always trying to see the positive side of things. And I say to myself when people are like, are you a glass, what is it, full, empty,
is it
half,
glass half, full
half,
or half empty,
empty, half full? Yeah, you got it. I'm like half tired. I say overflowing.
Half awake.
Yeah, half awake. I say overflowing. I always want to see my glass overflowing with happiness or joy. And I'm not trying to sound like some motivational tour, but I'm in a good spot in my life right now, and I want to share that with people. So that name, Moonshadow, it's a big deal to me.
This would be a good time to mention then Goldilocks.com for more information on Goldie, and
GoldilocksBand.com for more band stuff, even though
and that's with a Y.
It is with a
okay,
Y.
Okay.
Thank you. Not
Goldie.
The golden retriever spelling.
Yeah,
not your grandma's dog here. Sit, Ubu, sit.
Looking over my
you're generally in the world of harder edge rock, but you certainly didn't start that way. You mentioned to me the other day opera training.
That's where I started. I started with opera and had the most amazing musical teachers. I wish I could go back in time and thank them for not only the music education that they gave me, but the friendship, the believing, the support. Teachers are so important. They need to be just completely taken care of and paid more, but that's another story that we'll get on.
Definitely.
But I had some great ones and started in classical opera.
How old were you?
I started when I was three.
Oh my God. Okay.
And then really, really rocking and rolling when I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, going on literally world tours, collegiate choirs and this and that. And I got to experience the world at a really young age. I'm glad that I did. You grew up really quickly, but I always had a very strong head on my shoulders, led a very clean and healthy lifestyle ever since I was a kid. Grew up in a very impoverished, beat down neighborhood and just realized on my own, like, it wasn't the path I wanted to go down. And, you know, there were no TV shows to get you anywhere. You had to just be good and get picked and get on the road. And that's what I started to do.
And around 1999, you ended up opening for Pink?
Yeah, we opened for Pink, and like it went real R&B. And that was before Pink was even Pink. I remember I was outside of a Metallica concert, and it was Metallica and Kid Rock. And I decided to go promo before we really even had a website. There was no social media back then.
Really. Right.
There wasn't anything.
Yeah.
But I had some promo cards just talking about Goldilocks, and all of a sudden somebody else with a street team came up to me. And I could hear the saloon doors rustling, and the, can't do that. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I can't do this. My voice is blown out right now, but like that old West showdown sounding in the background. I'm like, what's this all about? And some girl came up and said, I'm on a street team too. And I'm like, oh yeah? Whose? And she flipped out this pink card, and in white it said P, and then the exclamation point upside down, NK. And then the other side was a white with pink written in pink. Or pink with the exclamation point. I'm like, who is this Pink? And then later on, I'd be opening for her at Beatstock and Staten Island. And then I would be with all of these crazy R&B, Lil Wayne, Lil Zane, Lil, all these rappers. They stuck me with the record company, put me with all these rappers. So I went more R&B. I've gone rock, R&B, heavy rock, never really heavy metal, back to pop, family friendly fun. That's what I'm right now. Yeah, it's full circle.
We're speaking with Goldilocks of the Goldilocks Band on KVCR-TV September 12th at 7 p.m. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Streaming at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming.
Rest your head upon a stone-clad bed. Pillow hot and cold, where you will never grow old. Close your eyes.
This will appear dark on the onset, but I know that it really isn't. I mean, now I'm talking about Good Night.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Solid rock, ballad-esque. We'll address the video here in a second, but let's talk about the song itself first. It's about a person's last moments, a person about to find peace. Give me the conception on this one, please.
You know, I had, my mom has been terminally ill my whole life, and she got a real bad set of cards, and I never heard her say anything negative about anybody, and she never complained, and I watched my mom my entire life be miserable and be sick, and her self-esteem was just plummeted because of her Crohn's disease, and everywhere you go, people are making fun of you out loud. They were cruel to her, and I watched it my whole life. And she'd always laugh, David. She would always have a smile. She would always have something great to say. And we're Catholic. I witnessed 7 times a priest at her bed giving her the last rite. And she'd always wake up because she was so positive. Good Night, if you go research it and look at it, is a song and a video about somebody saying good night. My mom was in the theater. She was an actress. And it's her last curtain call. It's really about her saying goodbye. And I was like, what kind of video can you do about that? And I was trying to do something cool and trendy. So we did the vampire bit, and it's mostly to say at the end that there's some conflict in the video, and vampires are supposed to live forever by taking another life. And at the end, me and a bandmate decided that we would rather walk into the light and disintegrate and not be vampires anymore than lead that type of lifestyle. So I guess there's a metaphor or a message in there that just says, no matter what you're going through in your life, if it is on the darker side, that you can choose to walk towards the light. Remember, your past is exactly that. It's a moment in time that is no longer, and today is a new day. And as trite and cliche as that sounds, you can meet a new friend tomorrow that knows nothing about you or what you've been through. They just know you for you, so start over. But yeah, that's a really important song. And it was really hard to sing it. And Chris Henderson from the band Three Doors Down, he produced that. He was the one that let me go in the vocal booth and get through that. Chris, thank you for being so supportive.
How did you meet Chris? Is this a Nashville thing? Kryptonite had just come out, and I got to meet this guy.
You know what? When we were opening for Pink and doing that whole Lil Zane, Lil Wayne run,
right,
we ended up opening for them like in 2001 or 2002. And then fast forward all these years later, I saw him around different places when I'd be in Nashville. He lives in Hendersonville. I got to be really good friends with his now wife, Jessica.
Now for something completely different. It's a sure great day for a wedding.
I know, right? Isn't it? I know. I'm sure I just scare people. They're like, what's going on?
I'm gonna dance right down the aisle to the altar. I'm gonna kick my heels up high on the way.
Yeah, it's a sure great day for a wedding. I do photography, so my studio, when I was mentioning the closet full of different video gear and photo gear, and I shoot photos and I do a lot of weddings. I do a lot of celebrity weddings and a lot of celebrity events. And I was going to a wedding in Nashville and I was whistling away.
Real good day to shine.
I'm sure I was mad at somebody and just trying to fake it. I was whistling this song. It's a sure great day for a wedding. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I got outside and it was sunny and I was like, real great day to shine. And then I started writing that song. It was really fun.
And now the thing is, I went to the video, and again, you can access this from Goldilocks.com. There's a storyline about It's a Sure Great Day for a Wedding. Is this a true story? The way it's written out, it's almost as if you were...
I was going to get married to a country star that dumped me.
Yeah.
That could be real.
Could be real, but it's not necessarily...
Yeah, boy, he was a pathological liar. I know, that's hard to believe, but... Yeah, I that didn't work out. I really thought that he brought the ring and all that, and I thought it was going to go, and it didn't. I just decided that I was going to go on national TV and give the song away as a free download so that anybody that was getting married, like the bridal party, bride, bridesmaid, I'm sure the dudes probably don't want to listen to Great Day for a Wedding, but like whoever.
It's a fun song.
It's a fun song. Yeah. There's a couple remixes. Yeah. I wanted to give it away to everybody. And Goldie is very much friend to the LGBTQ community and wanted to make sure that when we wrote the lyrics to that song, before it was ever legalized, that there was a song that included all people and all relationships, that if they wanted to get married or not, they had a song that included them. So if you listen carefully, you know, I refer to my partner, and there's just words in there that don't necessarily categorize it either way. It's for everybody. I think everybody should be included, and I tell people, like, I'm single. I have a cat. And if you're lucky enough to find love with anybody at all, not the cat, if you're lucky enough to find love with anybody, like, go for it. Like, I'm happy for you. And I never understood why people cry at weddings. And, God, I can't even make it, like, 15 minutes on a date these days. If somebody can find someone that they want to spend the rest of their life with, wow. That's grounds for celebrating. That's how I feel. That is my opinion. I think life is short. And there's enough hardships that we go through, whether we want them or not, or ask for them or don't. If you can find somebody that you love that much, that you want to hang out with 24/7, it makes me cry. I just love it. It makes me so happy. Whatever you believe in, whatever your politics, whatever your religion is, whatever. I always tell people, especially on social media, when you scroll through your buddy's stuff or something pops up on a feed, if you don't like what you see, guess what? Move along. Just move along. Keep your trap shut. That's what my mom used to always say. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all. And there's plenty of things that I disagree with or don't like. And I'm not going to get in war with somebody, and I'm not going to change their mind with my opinion. So I just scroll and I look for something that I can hit the like button or I can give a thumbs up. And I give the energy to that. And that's something, in the words of late Mother Teresa, one of the greatest women to ever roam this planet, was she said, you know, don't invite me to some sort of hate rally or I'm not going to come. But she said, if you have a peace rally or something for something, I will be there with bells on, with one of her one outfits, and she only had three. She's a great inspiration.
Did you have it in your mind from the beginning not to use him or her or any other sort of specific gender, or is that something that came about later?
That's a great question. I started writing it, and then in the middle of writing it, I thought, I just had so many great friends, and it's sad. Like, their dream was to be able to legally get married.
Yeah.
That was their dream, where there's people every day that are like, never mind this, you know, and I mean, I get it. I'm not married, so I don't walk your walk. But that was their dream, and I just thought, right after writing, I think it was the chorus or whatever, there was no indication either way, that I was like, okay, it's time to write this. Like, I'm going to write it for everybody. So it was intentionally written like that. I just think everybody should have a chance to celebrate something as great as that.
So here's something about that song, Great Day for a Wedding. Do you ever have people showing up at some of your gigs because they love Great Day for a Wedding?
Yes.
And then they get Dio?
Yeah, no. I mean, people show up. No, we'll play it.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
good,
the nice thing. Like, we really play so many different things. I really think people show up because they like a band member, or they like me. They like energy, and most people are pretty cool. But it is kind of fun if we're doing a pop show to pull out some Korn or some heavier stuff. Like,
good.
Because then everybody's happy. It's nice to be able to flip-flop around. Because is anything these days really one thing? You look at social media, it's like information overload, information highway. There's all this stuff. And it's like, I like to be able to reflect and change with the times and be able to do all these different things.
I think we kind of said it at the beginning with Metallica to Rick Springfield. And that sort
pink.
Of...
Pink. Got to put pink in
and pink.
Pink and Lady Gaga, yeah. Katy Perry.
Goldie and the Goldilocks Band will be on KVCR-TV September 12th at 7 p.m. More on Goldie at goldilocks.com. More on the band at goldilocksband.com. As KVCR Arts continues, we have Lillian Vasquez in conversation with comedian Paula Poundstone. We'll hear about Poundstone's new book, her podcast, and also her upcoming appearance at the Fox Performing Arts Center September 23rd, presented by the Mary S. Roberts Pet Adoption Center.
Our guest is longtime stand-up comedian Paula Poundstone, who is also an author and a favorite panelist on the NPR weekly quiz show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, heard here on KVCR Saturdays at 10, and now a podcast host of Live from the Poundstone Institute. She's a single mom raising three kids. How in the world did you have time for this interview with so much on your plate?
Oh, I like to tell people where I'm going to be working, and I figured you'd be fun to talk to, so it wasn't all that hard.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, I mean, this event, I've done it a couple of times before, and it's been fun both times. And it's to benefit the Mary S. Roberts Animal Shelter. I believe I'm right about that.
You are?
Yeah, no, I was there one time, and they had, like, an event ahead of time. Sometimes they have, like, animals that need homes there. And I think they had, like, a cheese wine thing or something. And a woman, she was an audience member, donor. She's there at a table, and I walk by, and she said, oh, Paula. And I turned, and she showed me this picture of a dog, and she looked at me and said, I adopted him. And she stared at me kind of funny, like she was waiting for my reaction. I thought, well, I suspected that you didn't give birth to it. Yeah, they're all, quote-unquote, adoptions, I suppose. But anyways, it is a fun night, a fun night of animal lovers.
Well, it is a fun night, and you bring the humor to the stage for sure. I want to talk to you a little bit about your newest book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. Why such a long title?
I don't know. I'm just a verbose person. My book before that, the one that came out several years ago, was called There's Nothing in This Book That I Meant to Say. And both times I was cautioned about, you know, a long title. They said, well, when they ship it, the packing slip won't have the whole title, as if that was a reason to change the title. But they, but I think when it was shipped under the name The Totally Un. That name's fine with me, too. It's The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. Each chapter, I do experiments in things that I or other people thought would make me happy. And each chapter is written as an experiment with the hypothesis and the conditions and the variables and hopefully the funniest field notes ever written. But the real question for me wasn't whether or not I would enjoy doing something. The question was, what thing could I do that would give me a bounce so that when I return to my regular life, the inevitable on and off rains of one's regular life, you know, what would be an umbrella, so to speak, for those weather patterns? So the analysis part of each chapter is the story of my regular life, raising a house full of kids and animals and being a stand-up comic for a living and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit more about that, and I did read the book, so I wanted to ask you a couple of questions from the book. But first, I wanted to comment, your testimonials or blurbs on the cover of your book are quite impressive. Wow, I mean, Lily Tomlin, Carl Reiner, Garrison Keillor, Trisha Yearwood, that one kind of surprised me. And of course, Peter Sagal. Will you share a little bit about Peter Sagal, who is the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? Some insight about him?
Actually, you know, they just aired, sometimes they'll air what they call an evergreen show of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which means that it's one that's been either put together from clips of other shows or somehow put together, because Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly news quiz show. And so, obviously, it focuses on the news of that particular week each week. And so they have to put together a show that doesn't for when they take a vacation or something, or if there's a week that they don't tape. So they aired this weekend one that happened earlier this year of Tom Hanks hosting.
I know,
Peter was on
it was
vacation
so funny.
And Tom Hanks hosted. But for them to re-air it, Peter recorded some additional stuff of him presenting it, explaining about the time that Tom Hanks came and hosted the show. I thought it was so damn funny what he said, because he was saying, he said, well, everyone was so excited about Tom Hanks hosting the show, because Peter is normally the host. And I have to admit, I was on the Tom Hanks show, and I do feel a little bit guilty. I was really excited about Tom Hanks hosting the show, and I kept feeling like, okay, is this a proper tribute to Peter? But the truth is, Peter Sagal is a fantastic host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's very funny, he's smart, and he makes it sound so easy. And it's actually a very hard job. It's sort of like pouring mercury onto a table dealing with panelists. We're a little hard to control.
I think you're right in that he keeps it all together and he makes it sound good for our listeners. I thoroughly enjoy the Tom Hanks, the repeat this weekend as well, which was very good. I want to ask you, Trisha Yearwood, good friend of yours, someone you know, or she read your book?
Well, the last two, I think. I met Trisha doing Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She was the Not My Job guest.
Right.
Which is the section of the show, for those who don't know, where we ask questions of someone well-known for something, but we ask them questions on a topic they're not likely to know anything about. And most often when we do that, whoever that person is, and we've had like an amazing array of Not My Job guests, but most often what happens is they're over the phone. You can't necessarily tell that when you're listening to the radio, but in fact, for the most part, the panelists and Peter and the announcer slash scorekeeper, we're all in one room in front of a theater full of people, but usually the Not My Job guest calls up on the phone. You know, they're patched in, and so the whole audience can hear them talking. In the case of Trisha Yearwood, we were doing a road show. We were at, in fact, another Fox Theater. We were at the Fox Theater in Atlanta. And she came down to the show because she likes it.
She's a listener?
She was very excited to meet us.
Wow.
And of course, we couldn't figure that out. But she was so much fun. She was funny. And I think she sold more country albums there than most of any woman. Or, you know, she's married to Garth Brooks. She has no shortage of fans herself. But here she came to do this goofy, silly show. And we just couldn't get over how down-to-earth she was.
Oh, how nice.
She was funny and self-effacing and smart. So, I don't know, it seemed natural to me to ask her if she played ping pong. Because I have ping pong parties in my backyard, usually at least a few times a year. So we started exchanging emails over this topic of her coming to a ping pong party. And she sent me pictures of herself playing at her sister's house, ping pong, so that, you know, I know that she's legitimate.
Right. Of course. You wouldn't want someone that isn't.
Every time we have a ping pong party, I send her an invitation. And she has lame-o excuses. Like one time it was, oh, sorry, Garth and I are performing at Yankee Stadium that night.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, exactly. I said, fine, be that way.
Whatever.
So anyway, so I asked her if it would be okay for me to send her my manuscript, and she said yes. And by golly, she read it and wrote the nicest things about it. Actually, it was very sweet. Its number one job is to be funny, and hopefully it achieves that. I think all the comedy luminaries that are on the back of the book suggest that it has. But I think for a lot of people, they were surprised that it's also very honest and, dare I say, moving sometimes.
That's Paula Poundstone in conversation with KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. Paula will be at the Fox Performing Arts Center September 23rd, presented by the Mary S. Roberts Pet Adoption Center. Tickets and more information at kvcrnews.org/events.
I want to ask you, in the book, you mention that you write about a ripoff answer, and you cite The Wizard of Oz, and that you don't like ripoff answers. Will you share with our listeners what a ripoff answer is?
Oh, I'm trying to remember what that was in regards to. I mean, the Wizard of Oz thing is just that in the end, she was like, you know, you had the power to do it the whole time. A little disappointing. I felt that the Good Witch could have stepped in a little earlier.
Me too. When I read that, and that's exactly what you mentioned in the book. I know it's been a little bit since you wrote it, but you could have told Dorothy right at the beginning, this is the thing, and then we didn't have to go through all that, and she wouldn't have had to go through all that trauma, right?
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah.
Did Scarecrow really have to get torn apart by the winged monkeys? I think not.
Yeah, I agree. Did the lion have to get scared? Did the Tin Man have to freeze up? Did they really have to go through all of that when we could have told Dorothy from the beginning? Would there have been a story? Maybe not.
Even as an adult, when I watch that movie, I always hope that they just make it unfettered, you know, and it comes as a surprise to me every time that they don't. I think because I already know what's going to happen, and I think, well, if I know, they must have known.
That's right.
I'm very easily, like, I'm a great audience member. Like, when I go to Disneyland, for example, it's really only, like, my third thought when I see a character. My first thought is excitement. I'm like, oh, there's Woody. And maybe my third, even fourth thought that, oh, it's a guy in a suit. That doesn't occur to me right away. I've already embarrassed myself before that occurs to me.
You write about simple things. I guess that's what makes you so funny. It's stuff most people can relate to. For example, if you remember this from the book, your first email and setting up your account.
Yes, I do remember, because that was traumatic, too. My first email, I was in my kitchen. I had one of those, like, tech people who, you know, comes to your home to teach you how to use your silly, stupid machine. And my manager had recommended this guy, and so she did me the kindness of coming to my house to sort of make the introduction, I guess, and to, you know, help out if I was still so confused. And so she was sitting in another room, but just around the corner from me as I sat in the kitchen. And so my first email was to her.
I guess if it didn't work, you would have known right away because she could have said, Paula, I don't have it yet.
Yes, exactly. And yet really, I think, as is so often the case with emails or even lower on the totem pole, even more stupid, is texting. You know, the truth is, if I had just spoken directly to her, it would have been better communication. The other day, who the heck was I watching do this? I was someplace, and someone was talking into their cell phone. They were texting, but they were talking into the phone in order what do they call it?
Voice texting
or something they called it. They said, I like to do verbal texting. And then she said, except for I always have to check it because it will say something other than what I said. And I just think, okay, how stupid are we now? So you're actually dialing the number and talking, but you still don't want to talk to the person to whom the text is going. I mean, these things have not sped anything up. They've created confusion after confusion in every... It's funny that the sitcom doesn't really rule television the way it once did, I don't think, because things like a lot of drama series, things like Breaking Bad or reality TV have kind of cut the grass of the old sitcom a little bit. And the premise of every sitcom was that somewhere in the beginning of the show, these beloved characters had some sort of misunderstanding. And somewhere in the end of the 22-minute episode, they figured out that they had a misunderstanding and it was worked out somehow.
Yes.
And I think, boy, you know, email and texts are just, they're diving boards for misunderstanding.
And autocorrect has not made it any better.
No. I saw the other day there was a book. There was a whole book of autocorrect mistakes.
Like, yes. So many that they had to write a book about it.
Amusing for a few seconds before I'm just like, yeah, it's stupid people communications. That's what it is.
All right, let's move on. You have three children, all adopted, Allie, Thomas E., and Tosha. I enjoyed reading about your camp with her and your get-real experience with all the kids to watch movies all day. But please share with me why you named your son Thomas E. and why you spell it Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, space, capital E.
I don't know. Well, I didn't, you know, with all my kids, because they were adopted, they already had first names.
Oh, so they came with their name.
Well, they came with a first name.
Okay.
And, I mean, I certainly had the option of changing those names. I'm not even sure why I didn't. I just didn't. It just didn't seem like the right thing to do to me, and so I didn't. But when it came to middle names, this, I felt, was my territory.
I see.
And so we sort of had a running joke at our house for a long time about the idea that, like, any time you were talking to a kid, you tended to put, like, an I-E sound on the top of something. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And so I think part of it just came from that sort of joke in the beginning. But we never called him Thomas E. There was a space there.
Right.
So it was Thomas E.
Right.
I don't know why, but he was in a few different classes where there was another Thomas. And the teacher would always act like this was so confusing, having more than one Thomas. Like, well, you know, the good news is his name is Thomas E. So if you just throw that E on there, you'll have that, you
you'll
know.
Be good.
It distinguishes him. He used to tell people, because I've never had a good explanation for it, other than I just felt like putting an E there. But he used to tell people it was short for Elvis.
Well, I thought it might have been short for Edison.
No, now you're really going highfalutin on me.
Okay, sorry.
That's a very public radio idea. No, I mean, no. It was neither. It was just an E. And his middle name is Magic.
No.
Yeah.
Thomas E. Magic?
Yeah.
Poundstone.
Yep.
Wow.
That's Paula Poundstone in conversation with KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. Paula will be at the Fox Performing Arts Center September 23rd, presented by the Mary S. Roberts Pet Adoption Center. Tickets and more information at kvcrnews.org/events.
Paula, I want to ask you now about your podcast. This is so funny.
Thank you.
Again, talking about simple things and scientific things. How did the podcast come about? You have some big NPR names in the credits. And,
well, we do.
How did it come about?
Really, the idea came from the benevolent overlord of Wait, Don't Tell Me, Doug Berman.
I knew.
Doug was also some of the brains, anyways, behind Car Talk.
Right.
And, you know, on Wait, Don't Tell Me, which I've been lucky enough to be a part of for, I think, 16 years now, one of the really fun things that happens is Peter, the host, will say, and again, it's generally talking about the week's news, and Peter will say, well, this week we came across a study that says blah, 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 whatever it said. I remember one time. There's been many over the years.
Yes.
But one was the study indicated the cats were the only animals that don't forgive. And he'll say this and then go on to proceed as if this is just now established fact. And I've always had to go, wait, back up. Who told you that? Where did you get that? And he'll tell me maybe the name of the scientist or the name of the university. And he'll know a little something about it usually, but I feel that they can't just go unquestioned, unchallenged. He did one a little while ago. I mean, you had to have been in the actual live audience to know how disruptive the very mention of this study was. But he did one a couple months ago now where he says there's a study out of University of Helsinki that says that some people that voted for Donald Trump did it because he's attractive.
No.
And then again, he goes to move on like this is now just established scientific fact. And I said, well, back up. I said, I can believe that some people voted for Donald Trump because they feel they agree with how he thinks. Or some people voted for Donald Trump because he's rich and they think that somewhere along the way, because he's a good businessman, that he's going to make all of America rich. I can believe that some people voted for Trump because they're angry. And some people voted for Donald Trump out of sheer ignorance, I think. I said, I cannot, however, accept that anybody voted for Donald Trump because he's attractive. That's ridiculous. And every time I asked him a question about an invention, I would not let him continue the show. Every time he tried to go back, I said, no, you have to tell me about this
Poor guy.
So Doug came up with this idea, live from the Poundstone Institute, where I have the opportunity to talk to the actual scientists who do the studies. And so each podcast, they're about 34 minutes, and the backbone of it is talking to the scientists who do the various studies.
Some of them are kind of gross.
Yeah, last week's was very bacteria-laden.
Yes.
Last week, one of the things was someone tested out the five-second rule about dropping food on the floor. And by the way, it's not good news. What's that list? Oh, I know. Last week one was the birthday cake one.
When they blow out the candles.
Yeah. I mean, I had always suspected that probably wasn't the most hygienic activity. At the same time, it's not like I've seen people dropping over dead right after they've gone to birthday parties.
Right.
So I'm not sure that when they measured the surface of the cakes, they did find a good deal of bacteria after someone's blown out. But, you know, we have some ability to fight bacteria within our own bodies, by the way. It's not like we succumb to
every single bacteria
there is. But anyways, yeah, there was that. And then we have also we do the PPP, the Poundstone Personality Survey, where we bring on a celebrity, I suppose one might say, to add to the database of our personality surveys. And we've had fantastic guests. Our maiden voyage, our first show was Dick Cavett.
Wow.
We've had Jay Leno and Dana Carvey and Kevin Nealon's coming up. And
well, I guess it pays to know a lot of comedians.
Well, it hasn't hurt. What's been wonderful is that everyone's willingness to join in. And this coming week, we have Tiffany Haddish, who is just on fire right now and was really fun and really charming. I fell in love with her right away.
Did you choose Adam Felber, who was also a panelist on Wait, Don't Tell Me, as your chief of research to co-host with you?
You know, Adam kindly was helping us out with our practice shows before we began recording, where we were just sort of working out the logistics of what we were doing and figuring out how to do it. And Adam kindly would come and pretend to be a scientist for us. And he was so great at it. I guess he enjoyed it because he decided that he wanted to be my head of research. He's one of my best friends from Wait, Don't Tell Me, actually. So
unless
we totally screw up our friendship by working together, so far it's been great.
It makes sense and it sounds good. Now, I want to see if you'll play along. I would like to ask you one of the questions you have asked on your podcast, if you'll play along. If you could trade places with anyone in the world other than me, who would that be and why?
Oh, yeah. Who would that be? Let me think. I might have said Michael Phelps until the shark beat him. I wanted to be, here's one. It was my dream for a while when I was younger to be a bear in the Disney World Parade.
Why?
And I still would like to do that. I like the anonymity of it. I like the idea that you're in this suit and no one actually, you know, and what a happy, specifically Baloo Bear. Baloo Bear's a very happy character. We were at Disneyland one time. We're waiting in line at, it was the Matterhorn, and the line was really, really long. And my son, who's a bit incorrigible, but he must have been about 7 maybe or something, and he sat on the stanchion, on the chain.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you're not supposed to do that. And Eeyore came barreling towards us and pushed him off. Yeah. And I tried to find out. I had a friend who worked at Disney at the time. I tried to find out, like, has there been an incident? You know, was there any, had Eeyore just run amok that day? It was the strangest thing I've ever, and you know, it's not even in his character to do that.
Of course not.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of a depressed guy,
yes.
Eeyore, but on that day, he was angry Eeyore.
or on drugs, one or the other.
We didn't do anything about it. I mean, there's really nothing to be done. It was sort of funny in an odd way, but I don't think he was kidding. It was just weird, but anyways. Nonetheless, despite that small trauma at Disneyland, I mean, when I was 18 years old, I went to Orlando because I wanted to be a bear in the Disney World Parade. I ended up working at the IHOP 11 at night to 7 in the morning, but still.
But you were closer than you were before, right?
Yeah, I always tell people that was my second choice.
So I was going to ask you, what was one of your first jobs before you went into stand-up comedy?
Well, I was a table busser a lot in a few different places. I happen to have OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, which, by the way, everyone has. It's only diagnosed based on the degree to which it interrupts your life. But if you own a restaurant, you're going to want to go to the OCD support group and bring a stack of applications because, you know, people with OCD make fantastic table bussers.
I bet.
Because, first of all, I have a constant list of things to do in my head that rotates, and that's pretty much what bussing tables is. It's unending. You clean your setup. Pretty much like that.
The same way every time, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. At one point, I worked for like 48 hours in a row, and I fell asleep while vacuuming. And the amazing thing is, I did a pretty good job vacuuming.
So let me talk to you a little bit now about your stand-up. You'll soon perform at the Fox Performing Arts Center in Riverside on September 23rd, which is a fundraiser for KVCR and, of course, for the Mary S. Roberts Pet Adoption and all the wonderful work they do for the community. Will you share with our listeners what to expect when you're on stage?
There's no mosh pit thing. I talk about raising a house full of kids and animals. Mm-hmm. I talk about trying to pay attention to the news well enough to cast a halfway decent vote. But my favorite part of the evening is just talking to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails. And so the truth is, although there are certainly jokes that I have said night after night, some of them for years, at the same time, because of the way I go about doing my act, I really am not sure specifically what I'm going to do. Probably a third of any given night is unique just to that night.
Right. I must say, if I can, it is my favorite part. I've seen you perform twice there, and it's my favorite part because you're so quick on your feet, and the audience laughs as the person you're talking with gets to have that one-to-one with you. So it's my favorite part of the evening when you're on stage.
It's my favorite part, too. Thank you. I always feel like Jackie Gleason when I say this, but I do have the best crowds. Not always the biggest, but the best. When I first started out and I worked clubs for years, generally speaking, the format of a stand-up comedy club show was there was an MC, there was a middle act, and there was a headliner. And when I was a headliner, other guys would kill to work with me. And not because I'm such a stroll in the park to be with or because they found me all that entertaining. It's because they wanted to get to talk to my audience. That's why I started doing shows that are just me. I don't usually work in clubs anymore. I mostly work in theaters. But I'm too selfish to share my audience with anybody else.
In the book you mentioned, just talking about your stand-up, Inklings to Ideas. Are inklings are something you think about and you shape it into the idea of what you're going to use in your stand-up?
Yeah. Yeah, it starts out very small. Starts out it's not even as big as an idea. It's just an inkling. And then, you know, eventually, hopefully, I build it into a full-fledged piece.
Got it. Tell me about your comedy influences. Who were yours that you followed or had some influence on your stand-up today?
Oh, I'm sure there were lots. In Boston, when I started, and I started in Boston in 79, there was a local guy. I mean, they were all local. But there was a guy that was raised in Cambridge. His name was Lenny Clark. And Lenny's still around and still a very popular comedian. And because Lenny was raised in Cambridge, and he was a fun, funny guy, so he had lots and lots of friends. You know, originally the audiences that we other comics were playing to were Lenny's friends. You know, it was largely guys from his neighborhood and stuff that came out. And I mean, eventually it grew beyond that. But that was really who was there in the beginning. And so, to some degree, Lenny influenced, because the stuff that Lenny's friends would like was the stuff that would go over. So, to some degree, Lenny Clark influenced a whole community of comics. When I came out to San Francisco, I was roommates with Dana Carvey for a while, and I began to fear that we both would sound too much alike. Because you know how when you live with somebody, you know, after a while it's like hard to remember who started saying what first. And I hadn't seen him in years and years and years, and then I went to see him like a couple months ago. Literally, it probably been 30 years since I'd seen him.
Wow.
And, oh my gosh, he is so damn funny. He does Trump and Obama talking. And there's something about him. He doesn't look like them.
No.
There's something about the way he does it that it's not like Rich Little accurate. It's just that there's something about the way that he does it that is so damn funny. And he's another guy who's just great with a crowd. But I would say, if there was, you know, sort of any one individual that has influenced anybody my age or my generation of comic or younger, we all owe a debt of gratitude to Robin Williams because he almost single-handedly reinvigorated audiences' interest in stand-up comedy in the late 70s. He was so exciting to watch because he had that sort of frenetic pace. And Robin would say that he was influenced by Jonathan Winters.
Sure.
But, you know, he had that frenetic pace. He did away with segues, which is very helpful to those of us who don't write that well, where you could just sort of jump around and the audience didn't really care. They were able to follow you just fine.
Right.
And then the other thing is, he was everywhere. and people were so excited to see him that a lot of times they went out to clubs, not so much to see whoever happened to be working in the club that night, but hoping Robin Williams would stop by. Sure. And that was all over the country. And the truth is, he did stop by. He could be working a 3,000-seat amphitheater in Cincinnati, and at 1 in the morning, he would show up at Uncle Funny's Yuck House.
Uh-huh.
So Robin influenced lots and lots of things about comedy, and were it not for him, I wouldn't be working, and I think the same could be said for many of my brethren.
I loved Robin Williams as well, just the funny man that he was. He is still and will be missed for a long time.
I think that's true. You know, it's a circle of life.
Sure.
People die all the time, but I think that there was something about the way he did and what he did that I do think affected people literally around the world in a way that not just anybody does. Hopefully we'll all be remembered somewhat fondly.
I also think his voice will stay forever because of Genie in Aladdin, and so he gets to be funny, and kids will know of him for years and years to come. I want to ask one more thing. I'd like to go to a comedy camp if there was such a thing. I want to tell stories about autism. Not that autism is funny, but to create awareness about autism in a humorous way. Any suggestions?
I don't know if it still exists, but Tiffany Haddish, that wonderful comic I was telling you about, she went to a program, and I don't know if it is or is not still there. It was called, like, Comedy Camp, and it was at the Laugh Factory in Hollywood, and she was a teenage girl. I don't want to steal Tiffany's story. You should interview her sometime. But she, as I understand, you know, I do know, like, she had all these challenges in her life, unlike anything that most of us have to go through. Lots and lots of challenges in her life. And at one point, a social worker had said to her that she had a choice. She could either go to therapy or she could go to comedy camp. And that Tiffany wisely, I think, opted for comedy camp.
So maybe there is
great
something
stories
like that
about it. Yeah.
Do you think we can make autism funny?
I think anything can be made funny.
Good.
I think that, you know, oftentimes people sort of wait to be offended. I think with social networking and stuff, you know, people are just sort of this hair trigger, either writing stupid things or just living with excitement over the idea of being offended when they read something. But I do believe that nature provides us with this wonderful coping mechanism of comedy. Therefore, anything can be funny. Maybe it's a matter of perspective. Maybe it matters who's saying it. And maybe it matters when and where they're saying it. But I do believe anything can be funny because that's part of what nature gives us as a way to get through difficult things.
Miss Paula Poundstone, thank you so much. She will appear at the Fox Performing Arts Center on Saturday, September 23rd. Thank you so much for your time and your good humor and answers.
That was Lillian Vasquez in conversation with Paula Poundstone. Tickets for Paula's upcoming performance, September 23rd at the Fox Performing Arts Center, kvcrnews.org/events. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Paula Poundstone and again to Goldilocks with the Goldilocks Band on KVCR-TV, September 12th at 7 p.m. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Ben Perper, Jessica Greenwell, and Izzy Gordon. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.